Welcome to Phantom Astronaut. I'd like to thank all of the Phantom Astronaut patrons for supporting the show. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support the show, visit phantomastronaut.com for all the different ways that you can help us continue to create. Today, I'm joined by boxing coach and singer, Phoenix Rose. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So where are you located? Because I'm here in Los Angeles, and I think it's a bit late for you.
Yeah, I'm in the UK. I moved to a smallish town in the west of the UK in Devon. Somewhere that I thought I would live. I made the choice based on an unfortunately not very nice situation. But actually it's wonderful. It's actually wonderful down here. I really like it.
I've never been out that way in the UK. I've been to the UK many times, but I haven't made it out to the country in the West very often or very far. So it's on the list. It's someplace that I'm interested in going. I have a couple of friends who live in the Western part. So
I highly recommend it. It's a very beautiful part of the world, and it's got beaches and the people are really cool. Like, everyone's really friendly and that kind of thing, which I like, because coming from London, people aren't friendly in London. People don't talk to each other in London. So
one thing that I mentioned in the introduction is that you are a boxing coach, but I know that kind of ticks a couple of different boxes for you, no pun intended, where your boxing coaching dovetails into sort of like a broader philosophy about life. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how you became a boxing coach and, you know, what your approach to that is and how that becomes something a little bit more broad.
Yeah, so I first walked into a boxing gym quite late in life. I was 19. Obviously, you hear lots of stories about people getting into boxing when they're kind of 5, 6 years old, and I was not. And I completely fell in love with the sport in the first session, and the head coach was doing pad work with me, and he said, "Oh, how long have you been boxing for?" And I was like, 20 minutes. And he was like, "No, not today, in life. How long have you been boxing for?" And I was like, 20 minutes. So he said, "Right, I want to train you up for the Women's Amateur Championships." And I went, okay. Like, I was completely just like, no idea, but I wasn't ever good at sport. Like, I was a dancer, so being good at a sport felt really, really good. And but I'd just been diagnosed with a heart condition, literally a matter of weeks before, maybe months before this had happened. And so I took it to my specialist, because I told the coach, and said, "Well, I have just been diagnosed with this heart condition." And he was like, "Okay, well, why don't you talk to your specialist and just see what the deal is?" And my specialist was like, "Absolutely not." And he was quite cool. Like, he never said no to many things, but he was like, "No way. This is far too dangerous. And, you know, England Boxing or the Amateur Boxing Association, they're not going to sign you off anyway, because you have to go through a medical procedure to get carded." And carded basically says, "I'm fit and safe and well to fight." And I would never have got, they were like, "We're never going to card you with your conditions, too dangerous." So I was like pretty bummed, but I carried on the training anyway. I really enjoyed it. And then left university, because that was when I was at university, stopped training for a while, picked it up again, had exactly the same thing happened. Went into a boxing gym, got on the bag, play by play. "How long have you been boxing for?" "I want to train you up to fight." Now at this point, you know, there'd been a few years, and I was, you know, my condition, I had medication, it was a bit more under control. I was like, maybe, let's see. And told them about my condition, and their doctor said, "No, not going to sign you off, but you can't fight." And I was like, "Oh my God." And so this kind of was hanging over me all the time, and I loved training, and I just was like, I don't want to go through my whole life when never having stepped in the ring. Like, I want to do it at least once. And then, you know, we had 2020, and, you know, we all got shook up, and I just, as life was starting to open up a little bit, I found a boxing coach in the park next to my house, and just met him, and I said, "Look, I'm never going to be able to fight, so don't, let's not even look at it, it's too depressing, but let's just make me really, really good. I just want to get technically really, really good." And that was it. So for the next couple of years, I just trained with him, and I reached a point in 2022 where life was becoming particularly challenging, and I was like, I need to do this. And I think I needed to do it on a bigger level than ego or just ticking a box. It was like a deeper thing. It was like, I need to overcome something. I need to take my life back into my own hands. I need to stop being controlled by somebody else's narrative. By this point, like, I'm not even on medication for my heart anymore. Still wouldn't get carded, still wouldn't get signed off, because unfortunately the condition is still there. It still happens. I get suffer with blackouts and all this kind of stuff. So it is pretty dangerous. But I just went through the back door. I basically signed a waiver that said, and it was a big show. There was like 1500 people there. And I signed a waiver that basically says anything that happens to me is my responsibility. And went into camp and got in the ring. And it was so vitally important for me on so many levels, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And it really made me completely relook my outlook on life just from going in and being in the ring for that 6 minutes. And in the first round, my opponent caught me really hard and really heavy. And I had like a blissful naivety when I went in the ring. Like, I just didn't think I'd get hit that hard. So I was probably out on my feet, but I wouldn't even consider that in my brain. So it's not like I gave into the feeling. It was just, but I sat down after the first round and I was like, I have two choices. I'm going to throw it all in now, because this is damn hard, like harder than anything I've ever done. And that was just 2 minute round. I was like, oh my God. And I'd done sparring up until this point. I'd been like wobbled, hit hard, but nothing like that. And I just was like, okay, I either throw in the towel and I just say, nope, it's too hard, I can't do it, or I get back up and it's 4 minutes of my life. And I went, fuck it, and got back up. And it was, you know, that, even that, and overcoming my own mind and noticing what you can achieve if you quiet the voice, because it's so easy to give in to the fear, to give in to the self-sabotage, to give in to the issues about self-worth. And boxing gave me an inner power, because it gave me something that made me feel uncomfortable every single day, and I overcame every single day. And I suddenly started to think about, how could I combine all the sort of holistic work that I do? So I do a lot of meditation and journaling, and I've been on my own healing journey, and Reiki, which is energy work. And how do I combine that with martial arts? Like, how could I combine the work that I've done to help support other people on their own mental journey, either in the ring, so getting them over those moments of fear and those blockages and those mental barriers, because boxing is 80% mental, but also utilizing the boxing analogies and the ways that we train and the way that we use martial arts. How could I just teach that to people? So the way that you attack your boxing training, how could I turn that into a verbal or life coaching sort of project that means that you don't actually ever have to get in the ring, or you never actually even have to put a pair of gloves on if you don't want to, but it's the mindset, and it's that how do you hit those points? So I created my company, which is called Big Sis. I called it Big Sis, aka Big Sister, because it's not about me being above or being a teacher telling you what to do. It's about being that support system that goes, you have everything within you. I'm just going to help you figure it out. And I'm going to be shoulder to shoulder with you. And I'm not going to do it for you. I'm going to stand with you while you do it. And I wanted it to be that kind of that support system, but it's you fundamentally, right? It's like, you can only do the work yourself. You can only be in the ring yourself. You can only go through life effectively yourself. So that's, you know, the kind of the long and short of it. And it's something I feel so immensely proud of, but also so immensely passionate about. And it's taking off. It's making sense to people. Fighters are trusting me. It's different, but it's like, all it took was one fighter, and now it started to, and he was an accident as well. It was his first ever fight, and I was glove running, so I was running the fighters from the green, the dressing room to the ring, making sure everybody had gloves and blah blah blah. And I was just taping his gloves, because in bouts they tend to wear gloves with laces, so you have to tape the laces down so they don't fly off and flick people in the eye, and or come undone or whatever. And he was hyperventilating, so I didn't know this guy; I'd never met him before, and he was like And I was like, nobody's saying anything. Like, nobody's intervening. Nobody's checking on him. Nobody's trying to calm him down. And we hadn't even made eye contact. And I was like, it's not your fighter. Don't get involved. It's not your fighter. Don't get involved. It's not your fighter. No, I need to get involved. He's going to black out before he even reaches the ring. And I just took him through a breathing exercise. And I just went, breathe in for four for me. And I counted. And it was a box breathing exercise. And I just kept counting for him and guiding him through. It was about 2 minutes. And I just felt his energy just go. Vroom. And I just went, you good? He went, yep. And off he went to his fight. And I was like, never going to see that man again. That was genuinely what I thought. I was like, I'm never going to see that man again, but I don't care. If I've made that impact and it's helped him, great. He knocked out the guy in the second round and came straight out of the ring, elbowed everybody out of the way and came and gave me a massive hug. And he went, there's no way I would have done that without you. And he's been like a real advocate for the work I do. And he's kind of brought other fighters into me, which has been amazing because it takes trust and it takes word of mouth for the work that I do to get the fighters to look at themselves in here, because that's not comfortable for a lot of people.
I guess there's a lot of mythology about boxing in, you know, our sort of shared, quote unquote, Western culture, you know, the English speaking world. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the popularity of these kind of underdog self-reliant sort of stories. Obviously, the big example to point to is Rocky and the films that have kind of come out of that and the continuing into the modern versions with Creed and all that stuff. What do you think is so attractive about the just about boxing as a metaphor for life? Because people seem to gravitate toward it, even if they've never watched a boxing match, even if they've never considered going to a boxing gym.
Oh, I've given this a lot of thought, including my own want to do it, because I've never been in a fight in my life, never been aggressive. And I'm not saying you have to be, by the way. I'm not making sweeping judgments. I'm just analyzing myself. And I was like, what made me want to walk towards this thing where you're going to get hurt, you get punched in the face? And there's something about boxing, same with a lot of martial arts, that you're dancing on a fine line between life and death. Now, I know that you're not going into, I don't know, you're not, you know, jumping out of a plane without a parachute. It's not that level of extreme, but there's something, there's like a safe level of danger that you dance with in that. And what it does is it takes you towards something that is a full body immersion, and you have to be present, because not only are you being hit, you are hitting, and you have to do it with a level of mental strength and fitness that the average person couldn't attain. It's not easy, and it's not for everyone. So there is this kind of wow about it, especially the people at the top of their game, because you just think they can go 12 rounds and take a beating. Sometimes they get a busted eye, a broken hand, a broken rib, you know, they've been knocked out a couple of times, they're out cold on their feet. They are being pushed to their limit, and they're doing it with glamour. They're doing it in front of cameras, they're doing it in front of millions, and they're putting their heart and soul on the line. And I think we seek genuine emotion, we seek genuine people, we seek genuine real life, soul, heart and soul, but it's been muted by all this fluff of social media, and there's so much nonsense in the world now, like all this AI bullshit, excuse my French, about like faking bodies and faking people, and people stop talking and they stop sharing, and it just, I think people seek like something that's real. And boxing is one of the rawest and realest things, that like you have to be so present to box. You can't be thinking about tomorrow. You can't be thinking about your shopping list. You can't be thinking about what you're going to do later. As soon as you start thinking about anything other than boxing, you're going to take a shot. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get your nose broken. You have to be in the moment. And I think people, they watch it and they kind of, they probably envy it in some ways. They're fascinated by it in some ways. They're, you know, part of it's just like, why would you want to do that? Like, why would you want to go and get punched in the face? You know, why? I think there's a lot to it. And I think it's magical. I think it's just such a magical sport.
So about 20 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that. So I did a little bit of boxing recreationally. And, you know, there's a few things that came out of it for me. The first of which was, unfortunately, I now have a like a tumor or growth sort of up very high on my spine from an injury. But you know, that's neither here nor there. But the state that you're describing about, you know, needing to be very mentally aware, very, you know, locked into what's happening in front of you with the boxing, you can't really get outside of that headspace, or you know, there could be damage that occurs. I've found in my own personal life that having boxed, it, what's the best way to describe this? It has made me paradoxically probably one of the more pacifistic people that I've, you know, encountered in life. I'm not very quick to want to be in any kind of a fight in a social mm-hmm. situation or something like that. But at the same time, it's also made me very efficient when things do become violent, and probably in a way that I wouldn't have been if I hadn't participated in boxing and recognized that there's real physical danger that can occur in a fight. So a good example of this is a couple of years ago, I owned a restaurant in a beach town here in the United States. It was actually in the state of Florida. And the Saturday nights would get a little bit rough as people would, you know, kind of be partying and going up and down this strip. And, you know, sometimes there'd be conflict, there'd be fights. And this guy came in one time and, you know, he just started manhandling one of my customers. And I was immediately over there and I had the guy, I just pinned him to the wall, and I kind of just used my hand, and it's, you know, went literally for the throat until this guy nearly passed out, and we were able to get the cops in there and take him away. He, you know, was on drugs and everything like that. But I wasn't, there were some other people who were trying to subdue him and stuff. And they went over there and they're like punching at him and they're, you know, doing all this other stuff. And I'm like, this isn't going to end this as quickly and as neatly as we need this to be done. I just don't, it's like, it's made me ruthlessly laser focused on making sure that something ends and that everybody else is safe so that we can go back to a state of peace. And I'm not sure if that's something that you find commonly with people who've done amateur boxing and things like that. But, you know, I just don't really have an appetite for violence, I think, the way that people who haven't participated in the sport do.
Oh, totally. So one of the reasons that I, because for a while I didn't understand why I felt so called to learn how to fight. And as a woman, I want to be able to protect myself. I've been in situations like most women where they haven't felt safe, and learning how to protect myself helped me pull my shoulders back, and it helped me feel for those exact, all of those things you just explained. Number one, when you learn how to box, you learn how to fight. So not just the technique, you actually learn how to spar, and you learn how to spar in a controlled and, you know, in an environment where you feel relaxed, and or not even you feel relaxed, in an environment where you can do it enough where you get to the point where you are relaxed in the decision making that you have. Because in the beginning of sparring, nobody feels relaxed. It's fight or flight. You panic, you make bad decisions, etc. Also, when you've been in a fight situation, you really have to get on top of that, because you go in that level of adrenaline. I'm a performer. I've sung in front of thousands of people, and I've never felt that level of adrenaline, that highest high. And you have to learn how to manage yourself through that. You have to learn how to input thought and rationale in that level of, like, you're going to die kind of intensity. And What it does is it brings a sense of solidity. And most of the fighters that I know, boxers I know, martial artists that I know, are some of the calmest people because they have their outlet. Physical, like we are traditionally suppressed. Like we are suppressed humans and we are suppressed emotionally. We are suppressed physically. That is men and women. We are stumped. We are put in boxes. We are caged. I believe that women and men should both have, and everybody in between. This is not being gender specific. I'm not. I'm just men, women, how you identify, non-binary, anything. Everybody should have a physical outlet for their emotions, and they should have a spiritual and emotional outlet for their emotions. So, we should all have. It should be a absolute. Everyone diagnosed and prescribed, you should be moving your body because there is, but in a way that's almost a bit primal. So there's something very primal about a boxing gym, and you have to be in physical contact with people. Everybody's kind of, and I don't mean this to sound provocative, I don't mean it like that, but everyone's kind of sweaty and it's very physical and you're all kind of in it together, and it's a bit violent, but it's controlled. And you've just got this like release in your body. Like if I was a wild woman in my ancestry, like running through the hills, you know, I would feel free. That's where I feel free. And it's the same with men. Like if you men have been beaten down and told that they should be this and be told that they have to be more this and less that, and they're kind of caged in and they're working their 9 to 5 and they've got nowhere to be and they're just yes, no, you know, whatever, they go and beat the shit out of each other for a couple of hours on a Friday night, and suddenly they're like, their masculine essence comes through, so that wild woman essence can come through. I've never felt more feminine than I do in a boxing gym. And I know that a lot of men feel more masculine because they go to a boxing gym. And in a society which has beaten down where we should be and how we should be and whatever, it just goes back to that natural instinct. But it means as well, we can protect ourselves differently, protect our loved ones differently, and we won't engage, and our ego is in check. There is something so humbling about boxing gyms because every single session I have my ass handed to me somehow, whether that's my fitness, whether that's sparring, whether that's drills, I come out and I've taken a beating, and it humbles you real quick. Like you can think you're the best thing in the world, like you have to have a bit of ego to survive it all because you have to believe you can win, but you also have to know that you could be beaten down. And so it means that you walk through life with a humbleness but a knowing, like, yeah, I could have my ass handed to me, but I'm also going to give it everything I've got because I know that I'm good enough. And I think that it definitely creates a whole different energy in your being. And even if people don't say they don't believe in energy, they know when someone walks into a room who's very self-assured and confident, something in them says, yeah, maybe let's not pick on that person. Maybe let's not go near that person. Maybe let's listen to that person. It just gives a It gives a sense of self. I think also as a woman, I used to walk through life with my shoulders down and my head down because I was so afraid of attracting negative attention from men because I've had, unfortunately, a couple of not nice experiences. I don't do that anymore because I'm like, I'm allowed to take up space and I feel less afraid.
And have you ever had an experience where, let's say that one of your clients has a significant other or family member or whoever in their life that they need to explain the need for that release? How does that navigate for those folks who maybe the people around them just don't understand why they need to engage in something that that has a perception of violence attached to it?
Interestingly, I haven't had it with any of my clients.
Hmm.
They've all been quite they've been okay. Like they've had quite a lot of support. It was actually me,
Hmm.
my mum and dad. They've found it really hard. My mum still finds it really hard that this is what I do, and it scares her. And she actually did come to my fight, which I didn't think she would do, and she had to have a couple of gin and tonics to get through it. But it scared her because she knew Well, one, she couldn't imagine doing it herself, which isn't criticism. Lots of people can't imagine doing it themselves. So she found that really hard, and she finds it really hard if I get hit in sparring, like if I get caught bad, because I'm at my gym, there aren't many women, and there are even fewer that spar. There's one, maybe. So I have to spar with the boys. And unfortunately, sometimes they don't know their strength. And, I've been taken down a few times, which isn't ideal. But you learn how to, I've learned that, like I said about the humbleness and the ego, I just walk into sparring and I say, I want you to go easy, super light. I don't need to get knocked out today. So if I get caught, my mom still gets really worried to this day because she doesn't like it. But she understands and it makes me happy. My dad was the same. I think he found it. He came from rural Ireland and there was a bit of a kind of a history of sort of rich people paying the poor people to fight, and it was like a bit of a negative connotation he didn't like. But he understands sport enough, and he kind of thought, sort of got into the situation, but he didn't like, again, didn't like me getting hit, didn't like, I think it's a tricky one, because if you've never boxed, never come to a boxing gym, never put on a set of gloves, difficult to ever relate to the feeling you get, even if you just hit pads. Like, you don't even have to get hit in the face to experience what, the, like I said, that primal energy and that release and that satisfaction that you feel, even when you feel that, when you hear that slap of the glove on the pad, it's just like, it's like a symphony. It just goes through you and you feel like you're doing something empowering. So you just have to know why you're doing it, and then nobody really has to understand. You just have to know why you are. If you don't know why you're there, obviously that's something to think about. But if you know why you're there, don't worry about what anyone else thinks, because this is your journey, your life, your body. And if it helps you, then it's doing its job.
And see, that's why I think what you're doing is so interesting to me, because, you attach it to these other things, like, about life coaching and about, how you're, navigating your emotions and your interactions with just your everyday life and society. And I think that kind of balances the approach in a very dynamic way, because I think there's also examples that we can point to. One is like somebody like Andrew Tate, right?
Mm.
Where, you see this person who's a fighter, and, I'm not going to psychoanalyze Andrew Tate. There's a lot of damage, that's going on there. I'm not qualified to figure out why he is the way that he is, but I know the effects that he and people in the fighting community have on, the broader population. And you look at some of the behaviors that they manifest, and it's like, if I can fight, then I can do sort of primally anything that I want in society. Who's going to stop me? And, without that sort of more Zen outlook about, why you're doing this, why this fits into your life as a well-rounded person, I think that there probably is an ability for people to fall into these things that I call like ego traps.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really important to you in your practice, to sort of make sure that people are finding balance versus just, something that's like this overconfident, overstepping, where they take it outside of the social bounds? Like, I don't know even how to describe it, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, totally. I think that it's so, so important to understand that your role in the ring will impact your outer life, but you are not. Let me get my brain just tapped out, because obviously, when you get thoughts that all come in at once and it will just short, it's just a short circuit. People who take their fighting persona into the rest of the world are running from the pain that they use the fighting to hide behind. That's my my opinion and my analysis is that they can't differentiate between what they release in the ring and within how to then be in the everyday. To handle your emotions outside of the ring, you will handle yourself in the ring, and then you will handle yourself back out of the ring, because there is a lot of highs and lows in fighting. Like, it's extreme highs, which means that there can be extreme lows. But if you can walk in with a sense of self that is solid and contained and emotionally processing and understanding yourself and knowing when you could get in your own way, knowing where you could block yourself, knowing when you could get overinflated, knowing when you could go on the attack and become vicious. Like, one of the things that I always say to my fighters is it's not a brawl. If they're scrappy and they're brawling and they're fighting with ego, why are you speaking their fight language? What's your fight language? How do you speak? So if I know that I've got a fighter who's quite calm and very technical, but he starts brawling, I'm like, why are you getting pulled into somebody else's war? That's not your fight. You fight like this. So stay here. Let him come to you and reject that. You know, you don't have to speak somebody else's language. And unfortunately, this is where ego can navigate you away from your own pathway. So I had one of my fighters, the one that I was telling you about earlier on, the one who I met and just started taking him through breathing exercises. So I was in his corner for his second fight, which was amazing because now we're on this journey together. And I'm now his head coach for his next fight. But he fought beautifully in his second fight. Like, he was so controlled and technical, and he knocked the guy out in the first 8 seconds. So head kick, because he was a Thai fighter. So this was a Thai fight. So he did a head kick. So I only do boxing, but I work with Thai fighters as well, because the striking element is still quite similar. They have different stances and stuff, but we make it work. And I do a bit of training in Muay Thai to understand the sport on a bit of a better level. Anyway, so we took the guy out in the first 8 seconds, and I watched him come up into his body. Like, he sort of became like an inflated balloon. He went whoom, and I could see him look so proud of himself because he was like, nailed it. And I just shouted across to his corner where he was standing. I went, don't you fucking dare. I went, you stay in your body, you stay present. This fight is not over yet. And he just came all the way back in, whoop, straight back grounded. And the fight nearly lasted 5 rounds. This guy that he fought was, we bless him, he was a champion, because it was dominant. You know, my guy, it was dominant, dominated the fight. But this guy could take a hit. He could take it. But by the 5th round, they called it because he just was taking too many head kicks and they had to pull it. But it was the whole time I just said to him, stay present. Stay in it and stay controlled, because you could lose it on a silly shot to the chin if you get cocky. Great thing is, he knew that and he stayed in it. Some people don't want to listen. And unfortunately, there are some people that you can't bring them out of the space of I'm better than everybody else. And unfortunately, if they have a lot of success in the ring, that just feeds back that narrative. Then if they lose, they don't take any accountability. It's about somebody else, or they were robbed, or whatever the excuse may be. So they don't learn and they continue on the cycle. And that will be the same cycle they repeat in friendships, in relationships. And it probably comes from a place of shame from when they were a child. So I understand people on a very deep level. And I also understand if somebody... It's unlikely you get people in that level of inflation to come to you for help because they believe they don't need it. And I wouldn't go to war with someone and trying to convince them otherwise. I think people, unfortunately, you have to let them do their thing, because karma will get them in the end anyway.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack there, and maybe we can move on to something else in a second, but there was something that somebody told to me a long time ago where they said, like, there's always going to be somebody tougher, and there's always going to be somebody who has some sort of an advantage, even if they're not necessarily like physically tougher. When you are in a boxing match, you are kind of on relative even footing. You know that, you know, there are certain rules, there are certain, you know, stances that everybody's been taught. You're kind of divided up by weight. When you take that outside of the boxing ring and you bring that into, you know, the quote unquote real world, well, you know, what is that? If I, even if I, even if I get into a fight with somebody and I end up pummeling them, you know, then what? Then I'm going to be walking away from wherever that is later and they're going to run me over with their car. I mean, it's just like there's no good outcome from bringing that mentality out into the real world, because you're not on the same kind of playing field when you're in the real world. It's a very different form of reality, where one is very cut and dry with a lot of structure and the other, you know, is chaotic, and you know, you have to engage with them differently. But you know, some of these things that we've talked about throughout the conversation about, you know, having confidence, having the ability to manage how you deal with crisis, those are great skills to have, and those are the kinds of things that you take with you. But when you take bravado and you take that sort of performative personality and you bring that into more everyday social situations, there's never going to be a good clean outcome like there is in the ring.
No, I agree. And I think that in the ring, you are free. Do it. Do it well. Give it everything. Do it to the best of your ability. Do it to, like, make sure that you, I always say to my fighters, I don't care if you win or learn, like, you, as long as you show up and you give it everything and you've done everything that you can in training, like, I'm proud of you. I'm always going to see anything that isn't a win as a lesson, a development, you know, as long as I see that you tried and you gave it everything, I'm proud and I'm happy. And unfortunately, there are some people as well that can't, that need the validation so much. And they need to assert their masculinity, quote unquote, to feel masculine, because for whatever reason, they did not feel masculine growing up. They may have had an abusive parent. They may have been bullied at school. They may have been small in their physique and picked on, or, you know, whatever, might have been a late bloomer, whatever it is. So their need to go around and be a bully in life and pick on people and start fights and take that energy out of the ring and out into the world is because they are so deeply insecure within themselves. Deeply, deeply insecure in themselves. And the ones that can shake hands and have a cuddle at the end of the fight, they're the ones who are working on themselves, because they're in a place where they're so comfortable with their efforts, their work, their opponent, what they've just experienced. Like, they're the ones that I feel have a better all-round balance. And I think sometimes that takes time, because, you know, especially if you're young and you don't know why you're behaving that way, you need guidance. And when I say young, that could be young adult, you know, it doesn't mean like 10-year-old. You need somebody who will call you out, and in a way that you feel you respect that person, you feel safe with that person. And something that I've learned is men and, you know, I understand there was a book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And so there's, you know, there's been talk about this. So what I'm about to say isn't like profound, but I really understand the notion that men and women speak different languages. Again, I'm not cutting any gender out. I'm just going from my perspective. I've only ever worked with male fighters and female fighters. I haven't worked with anyone who's non-binary or trans or anything like that. So I speak in the specifics of what I know. And men speak different languages to women. So we speak a different language. We understand things differently. We process things differently. We feel things differently. We even have different urges and, you know, thought patterns and whatever. And now that I know that, and I walk through my career like that, with the understanding that if I have a man in front of me who I am trying to crack, to understand what his physical and mental blockages are from doing well in the ring, or when, why he's always out of his body and why he's always ungrounded, and why he always gets triggered by his ego. Like, I have to find a language that isn't threatening. I have to find a language that isn't overly soft, emotive, fluffy in inverted commas, woo-woo. Like I have to find something that lands. I have to find a way to communicate that doesn't feel emasculating. I have to find a way to get in without the fear of being seen, you know, of that pain point within them. So what I've learned to do is I take them, I already know, like I've already figured it out. Even they haven't told me, I already tend to know because I read people very, very well. And I tend to, instead of asking them to talk, especially in the early stages, I tend to take them through guided meditations. It could be in the middle of a session. If I know that they're not doing well within themselves and there's something that's coming up, and I might say just like, how are you feeling? And they'll give me like, I'm pissed off. Why are you pissed off? Oh, because I'm being shit at that today. Okay. Why does that feel like that? Why do you feel annoyed about that? And then I start like piecing together where maybe there's a narrative running through them that could have been born from childhood, you know, whether about not being good enough, worthy, you know, the there's always a few that tend to come up. And I'll just take them through a guided meditation. And that means they don't have to speak. All they have to do is listen. And so that sometimes, for actually most of the fighters that I've worked with, that's worked. Another one is I just ask for the facts and I just flip it matter-of-factly. And I just say, do you understand that maybe you feel like that because of that? And they're like, yeah, I guess so. And I'm like, sweet. To not feel like that, it would be good if we could work on X, Y, Z. And I keep it very like punchy, simple. And although, as always, for anybody to be seen is uncomfortable. And when somebody calls us out on ourselves, like it's uncomfortable. If you do it in a way that's almost like pragmatic bullet points, it works. And I've learned a new language, but I also, everybody is bespoke. Every single person I work with is bespoke. One of the fighters I worked with really wanted my help, but my God, he was uncomfortable. He hated that I saw straight through him, but he loved the work that we did. And it was really interesting because every time I saw him, it was almost just like a recoil in his body because he's like, she's going to see me again. But it wasn't until after his fight when he won and he was an animal, he hugged me and said, I wouldn't have been able to get through that without you. And it was another lad and his was different, completely different. He was very, very anxious, but he was quite open to talk about the fact that he was anxious and same thing, but he was much more verbal the whole time. Like, I'm really appreciating the work that we're doing and blah, 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 blah. Whereas the other guy wouldn't say anything. I could just feel his discomfort, but he never left. You know what I mean? He was always there. He was always present. He always listened, he'd take it on board, but he was deeply uncomfortable in the process, but he knew it was benefiting him. So I understand that too. And I don't take that personally and I don't push them past a point where I'm like trying to make it for my ego to be like, oh, can't you just tell me that you're, you know, tell me what's good. I'm like, does it work? Are you doing better? Are you okay? That's all I care about. So if you don't want to talk to me because you're feeling like, this is the day I don't want to be seen, I don't mind, as long as you're not going backwards, you know what I mean? So, and a few of them laughed together. They told me recently that they were in camp last time and they all just sat around and one of them just went, don't you just fucking hate it that she's always right? And they all had a bit of a giggle about it. And I was like, sorry, sorry guys. But I respect them and I've learned how to speak that language. So there are some languages I'm never going to be able to connect to, so people who have just got no intention of looking within. I haven't got the tools for that person when they flat out don't want to see, because you cannot force someone to slow down and look at themselves if they don't want to, and if they don't want to better themselves from within, that's a fight I don't like. No one should try and fight. You have to let somebody want to change and grow and evolve, and there's a few people in this world who are quite happy being that version of themselves.
I think a lot of that for you maybe is a bit of a natural inclination toward empathy, and part of that dovetails into being a performer. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your singing, your performing, and how that all coexists with what you're doing in the boxing arena?
For sure. I'm a singer-songwriter. I have been from a very, very young age. I think I was 10 when I started having vocal training and started writing songs, probably younger. And my biggest goal, dream and aspiration was to sing songs around the world. That was all I ever wanted to do. And all I have ever wanted to do, although now I've got this sort of parallel life that works alongside it, which I love. So yeah, I've done a lot of stuff in my career. I've worked in film, I've sung at Glastonbury, I've sung at Hammersmith Apollo, I've sung at Wembley. I was on The Voice. So I've done a lot of stuff involving music, but I think the thing that's been quite wonderful of how my life's evolved is I thought there was only going to be one path for me. So I kept trying to force this path, and it kept me quite small, and it was also quite frustrating because music is my heart and soul, quite literally. I put that into the lyrics and into the music, and there's no solid comeback, as in you put it out and you put it out and you put it out, and yes, you might get positive repercussions, but there's no, like, until you, I don't know, if you've set a goal to, like, win a Brit Award, until you win the Brit Award, there's no, like, solid goalpost where you've gone, landed it, or you get number one or whatever. Things that take a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of whatever. And I've been growing through a very difficult time in the industry where it used to be you gigged and that's how you got spotted and seen and noticed. And then this, like, flip happened where it was like nobody was coming to gigs anymore. It was all about social media, definitely triggered by COVID. That suddenly, like, it was TikTok and it was posting, and I was like, but that's not what I know. And I was so discombobulated by the change. It's taken me a while to find my feet again in this new way of doing things and to be accepting that there's a different way and I can't do it how I used to because it doesn't fit the mold anymore. But what's happened, which is lovely, is the music now has less pressure, because I sing and I write because I love it and it just comes out of me, and I've been through a lot over the last year, so the writing has been amazing. And then I've got this thing, this solid thing that keeps me very present and very grounded and has that positive goal setting where there's, like, solid things that I can kind of work towards, which means then there's this floaty freedom with the music where I don't have to worry about the goalposts anymore. Because when you worry about too many goalposts in creativity, it stumps the creativity. And it means that I found that when I was trying to, focusing on the money or focusing on trying to go viral or focusing on trying to get a great cover or whatever it was, everything within me creatively was just dying because none of it was about this purity of what music always was. It's just a part of my soul. It was just a gift I'd been given, and I wanted to share it with people, and I wanted to use it to connect. And now I've gone back to that pure state where I sing and I write, and I love it. And I found my home to it, if you know what I mean. And boxing really actually helped me get back into that alignment. And I think because boxing is so humbling and the work I do is so grounding, I don't take the music industry so seriously anymore. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand how tough it is as an industry. Everybody knows it's talked about. There's no money in it. There's no, unless you reach the top, even the Spotify streams, 0.0003p a stream, wild. But I'm not angry anymore. I'm not fighting with it anymore. I'm not saying the world's not fair anymore because I've got this other thing that keeps me really solid. And it means that I get to sing my songs and I put them out there. And I still pray for, I'm still working towards the big goal. I'm still working towards that big dream. But there's this freedom in it now, which I, so they work really well together. And I'm a very feminine woman. So I always like to shock people as well when I'm at my gig and I've got all my hair in and my eyelashes and, the cute outfit. And then I'm like, and I punch people in the face for a living. And isn't that a nice little juxtaposition?
Well, that's a very cool contrast to exist within. I think you've found something that's probably going to continue to reach lots and lots of people and resonate with them. Where can people find all about both your coaching, your music, everything?
So my music name is Phoenix Rose. So Phoenix Rose Music on Instagram and Threads and Facebook. It's Phoenix Rose Creates on TikTok. My company is Big Sis, as in Big Sister. So I've got a website for that, which is www.bigsiscoaching.uk. I also have an Instagram for that, which is Big Sis Coaching. And the work that I do with that, I can do online as well as in person. So if there's people like your audiences, if they're further afield and they like what they hear, we can do, I can do it on Zoom and stuff like that as well. Yeah, there's an email attached to that if people want to get in touch, or they can just slide into my DMs on Instagram. That's probably the best place to contact me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time today, Phoenix Rose. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I hope that people go and explore and find everything else that you're about through your socials. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Visit phantomastronaut.com for all of the different ways that you can help us to continue to create. And I will see you out there.